Louise McSharry on 2FM.
You know Gemma Dunleavy as the performer and singer. She's on our 2FM Rising List and I've played her song Up the Flats loads of times on the show. And I suppose we are here to talk about the flats and to talk about where Gemma grew up, Sheriff Street, and why it's so important to her. Hello, Gemma.
Hello, Louise. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm delighted to have this opportunity to talk to you about this because you've been talking about your area kind of as long as I've been aware of your career. You've been talking about your area and how important it is to you and what a huge part of you it is. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I grew up in Sheriff Street. I still live there now. And I was born in the flats there and, you know, they were knocked down in 96. I suppose I'm so proud of my community because I've grown up seeing the struggles of people from there, and I guess even more so now where, you know, I feel like we've constantly lived through a housing crisis and through, you know, the heroin epidemic and through all of that. And I feel like now that I see my community being dispersed and almost like our history being like wiped out, like as if we didn't go through all of that, I feel high levels of frustration and also a huge, huge need to kind of try to bridge the gap that's happening and stop the divide that's happening between our community and working class communities and those of upper middle class communities, yeah, developers and the authorities, because that's just getting wider and wider.
Well, let's talk about that because first of all, how would you say Sheriff Street is viewed by people from other parts of the city?
So Sheriff Street was always known as a rundown area with high levels of crime. I feel like most people that aren't from inner city areas or from outside, when they hear Sheriff Street, they think of negative things, you know. I can't blame that because when you're fed negative things from the press and the media and the authorities, you know, if you're not going to look into it, what else are you going to think? I have the privilege of being on the other side of that, of always being seen as the one to blame or always being seen as the one to do wrong. So I never see people in that way. And I think that's such a beautiful thing, but I think it's a sad thing that, you know, I see the world and I see people that way because of the injustices that I saw growing up.
And do you, have you personally experienced that? People kind of looking at you in a particular
100%.
way? 100%.
Like, you know, like when I was going to, like, I mean, when I was in secondary school, you would think that this class divide didn't exist. But when I was in secondary school and I was going to ballet outside my area, I'd have people going, oh, you must be one of the only people in Sheriff Street doing ballet. I'm going like, is your head okay? Like, do you, you know, why not? Like, why would you think that we can't? And this is because what the media has fed people, you know. I think, you know, growing up, the amount of police brutality I saw on young people, I hung around the flats when I was young and you just knew when you saw the police, you legged it because they were always going to search you or check you. And if you said in anything in one way a smart answer, not as a girl but as a youngfla, which half of us were, you know, youngflas, and if one of them said anything in any way cheeky, they were getting handcuffed and put in the back of a Mariah. The amount of youngflas that I saw get beaten to a pulp in front of me, you know, just for not being polite. And why would you be polite when you're constantly being, you know, picked on because the area you're from, because when you give your name, the police know who, the police have arrested your brother or something the week before. Like, I saw this all the time. And and it's so frustrating because our community, like, you know, years ago, it was a rundown area and, you know, there was high levels of crime, there was overcrowding, there was high poverty in the area, and there was a low percentage of people going through the education system, and there was little to no community facilities or resources. So all we had was each other. So, you know, we built a community so strong. We had neighbours like family still to this day, even though the flats are knocked down.
I saw you post something the other day on your Instagram stories where you said you didn't know if it was your siblings or your cousins and it didn't matter.
No, exactly. And that's the way we still are now. And to think that, you know, our future generations aren't going to have that is really sad. And I think, like, you know, back then, what I think people don't realise, and what I just, you know, I really, I don't want to be doing this. I don't want to have to speak on this issue. I wish that when any time I spoke about this, I could leave it in the room that I speak about it in, but I don't. I carry it around with me, but no one is going to tell our story or show our pain like us.
Yeah.
And we don't have very many people from Cherry Street out there speaking for us. I don't want someone else, you know, I don't want it, but a politician who's never experienced what we experienced speaking for us, because they don't understand. And, you know, the thing is, like, when... I know there's probably a lot of people out there that are thinking, you know, working class people, they just want to live freely and, you know, they just want to get houses for nothing. And, you know, and here's another young one venting her frustration on the housing crisis, like, blah, blah, blah. This is so much bigger than this. You know, like, just to give you a glimpse of some of the stuff that we have experienced and lived through, like what I said about the area, you know, high levels of crime, overcrowding, poverty, you know, lack of people going through the education system, little to no stimulants, you know. And this is like late 70s, like little to no stimulants going on, playgrounds were burnt out cars, you know. We got on with it, we all had a great time. Little to no stimulants in an environment, and then in comes this drug called heroin from an outside suburb. So you have an environment that has zero stimulants, and then you bring in a stimulant that's highly addictive. Most of the community got wiped out by it. Every single person I know on Cherry Street has a family member that they've either lost or is still suffering from addiction. By 1982, there was 10% of 15 to 24 year olds had tried heroin. Now, in an environment that has zero stimulants, the chances of getting off that heroin are so low. So you had families and the community being completely wiped out, and we're still looking at the skeletons of that today. And then to see your community and your people be vilified for that by, you know, even people using the word junkie towards towards a family member of yours who was struggling from a drug addiction because they were left to neglect by the authorities.
There's a real, I mean, across the board, but obviously it's very concentrated where you're from, but across the board, there's a real failure on some people's part. And you know, people, professional people, you know, people in government, people on the street, to have any level of understanding of addiction and how it functions. And there's such judgment there.
Yeah, completely. And I feel like, you know, it's easy to, it's very easy to blame working class people or to blame vulnerable people. It's also easy to pull the wool over the, you know, the most vulnerable people in society, to pull the wool over their eyes. That's what happened in the 80s with the redevelopment of Spencer Dock and the IFSC. We were promised, you know, museums, galleries, community, social housing, 10% social housing. None of that happened. We were promised no office blocks. All we got was office blocks. There was a loophole around the commute, the social housing, because they said we don't have enough money to put into to give the 10% of social housing, but we do have other developments out in Talla and out in Coolock and places like that, we'll send you out there. You know, and this is kind of, this is much bigger. Like, I, you know, I'm looking at the degradation of my community over the last 20 years, and I see the frustration in people, and I see this frustration being aimed at middle class, upper class people because they're complicit in it. I see this frustration being aimed at the government and the developers because they're ransacking our community again, like they did in the 80s, and nothing's being done about it. And I don't want that. I don't want further divide, you know. And then, it kind of looks like you have working class people who are so close-minded and not accepting of anyone. And it's the men in the suits that are causing this divide. And again, it's just easy to blame the most vulnerable people in society.
It's the classic story of gentrification, isn't it? It's an area that nobody wanted, that people like to talk down about and look down their nose at. And then obviously as Dublin grew and as the money flowed in, you know, built, all of a sudden it was a desirable location geographically. So we'll just get rid of the people who've made it a place to live.
Like, we kept this place warm. No one wanted to live in Cherry Street. You had to change your address to get a job. Now we have to change our, job to get the address. Like, I'm looking for a place to live now, to live in an apartment in my area. A one bedroom apartment, your average you're looking at is 1700 a month. You know, I'm going to view these places, and I'm very aware that the people that are renting them to me are, I feel it and I see it and I've heard it in certain instances. they don't want to rent to anyone that they think is from Sherriff Street or of that class bracket,
yeah,
because it doesn't fit into their box or their narrative. Mm. And, you know, I want to change that narrative. Over the years, all you see is headlines in the paper and the news, negative stuff about Sherriff Street and our area. Never once was the positives highlighted. We had people from big media companies come down and film Sherriff Street from a Jeep like they're in a safari park, you know. This is evidence is on YouTube. Put into YouTube Sherriff Street and you will see the exact videos I'm talking about. This needs to stop. I think this narrative needs to change. And I'll start by giving you a new headline. Sherriff Street and the North Inner City has produced these people. You have Luke Kelly, you have Jim Sheridan, you have Stephen Gately, you have boxer Pierce O'Leary, who's a neighbour of mine. We have two incredible boxers who just qualified for the Olympics actually this week. Kelly Harrington, who I have the privilege of going to school with, and Emma Brennan. We have Barry Keoghan, Thomas Cairnbourne, Lynn Rafferty. I mean, the list
Gemma
goes
Dunleavy.
On. You know, but like, it's so sad to me when I see our history being completely wiped out, like as if we didn't go through all of this stuff.
Can you tell me a little bit about the community, because you've mentioned the community and that comes through so strongly when I listen to you talk about your area, about, and it seems from an outside perspective, it looks so special, the tightness, the bond that people from your area have.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about that, because that's special and we don't hear enough about that.
Yeah, yeah. So like, our community is one of the most tight-knit communities you could come across.
And I have to say, at a time when there are not that many tight-knit communities left in Dublin.
No, exactly. And that's why I want to preserve that. You know, it's always been so great to me growing up in an area where we all lived in each other's pockets, you know.
Yeah.
There was, you know, no matter how many, you know, the big family pack of King, you know, all the crisps in it as kids. No matter how many of them you had, we still always had a pack of cut in half each. You know, there was always so many of us, and the kids were everyone's kids, you know, on the road, in the flats. Like my nanny actually is not really my nanny. She's my nanny's next door neighbour, you know.
Yeah.
And her kids are my uncles and their kids are my cousins. And I can't tell the difference between them and me, blood cousins, you know. Like the back in the day when most of the men were working in the docks, the women were at home, the women were looking after the kids. They were the matriarch of the community. They were dressmaking, they were doing the dinners, and the husbands came home maybe once a year, you know, and then went off back out on the boats to earn money and send it back to the family. So you had this incredible, like, nurturing environment where no matter what, like, my nanny always used to say, it's the line in my song, Up the Flats, we had nothing but we had it all.
Yeah.
Because really, we did. And I always feel like, you know, I'm very privileged to have the life that I have and to be able to, you know, to pursue my dream as an artist, like, because of me ma and dad. And, you know, they would have loved to have that. My ma would have loved to be an artist, but she didn't have the privilege of that, you know. She worked as a dressmaker and then wanted to, you know, work in an office, and she tried to do courses and stuff. And now she's back a dressmaker again. And like, her and my dad built up everything to give me the life I have. And I'm so, so grateful for that. But it's just hard, you know. You feel that sense of guilt that so many people don't get the chance to do that. And then in the world that I'm in, I see that that's not the case for a lot of people. And it's only kind of when you step out of the bubble of our community, you realise the prejudice against it. So, for example, my dad's a truck driver. He's driven trucks all his life. I used this example on a podcast I did last week. He's around the same friends and the same, you know, work community his whole life. And he wouldn't really notice the prejudice as much as I would, because I have one foot in the arts world and one foot in the... And I'm so privileged to mix with so many incredible, amazing people. But when you do step outside of the bubble, you go, oh, hang on a minute. And I feel this sense of protection over my community, over our accents, over the way we dress, over the fact that, you know, not everyone in our family or our community has gone through education. And, you know, a lot of them slipped through the net and not even didn't make it to education. But a lot of them are caught up in systems and cycles that really only a small percentage got out of, you know. Yeah. And I'm talking even when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of blame from the authorities on us, you know. Like, you know, one of another North Inner City 20-year-old, 16 years ago, arrested for a crime that he didn't commit, that he, you know, he was cleared of, and was found 3 days later in a cell unresponsive. 16 years later, they're still fighting for justice. And that was the kind of stuff that was the norm, you know. Mm. He just happened to, that poor fella, Terence Wheelock, just happened to pass away. The amount of people that were in situations like that, arrested just because they gave back a cheeky answer, were beaten up and just about made it out, you know, beaten to a pulp. These are systems that have been in place years. And I think with the developments and stuff that's going on around us now, it's so easy for the likes of the media, the authority, the politicians to kind of ignore our history and ignore our pain. Because to acknowledge our pain and our history, the media, the authorities, the police, the politicians and everyone who stood by when all of that stuff was happening would have to take responsibility. And no one wants to take responsibility for what went down in Cherry Street. You know,
what do you think it's overly simplistic to say would solve it, but what would help?
It's a really broad question, yeah. You know, and like I said, like, I'm no politician.
Yeah.
I'm speaking as a resident in my area and a person clutching at straws to try and preserve and save their community, you know, and I will be doing that till the day I die. Do I have all the answers? No. But one thing that I do feel needs to happen is the developments coming in a stop needs to be put to these developments. A €300 million development now is planned for Cherry Street. 741 built to rent apartments, which 10% of them are promised to social housing. But what happened in the 80s in the development in Spencer Dock? There was a loophole put around that. Even at that, 75 homes out of 741 to social housing is nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a hotel that's planned for straight out onto Cherry Street. What does that mean for Cherry Street? There's compulsory orders now left, right and centre. And then what happens for the people who, the small amount of people in Cherry Street that ended up buying their house, that own it? We're going to be sitting in compulsory orders, you know, fighting.
What's
to
a compulsory
us.
Order?
A compulsory order
you
is
have
when
to move.
You, when you, even if you own your house,
right?
Right. So my auntie in Ballybock, when the Croke Phillips flats were knocked down, she was the only person on the road who owned her house. Years ago, her husband was a coal man. It was, you know, none of our family owned houses back then. And years ago, her husband was a coal man and saved up a lot of money and managed to buy her house at the time. Yeah. And, you know, huge, huge achievement.
Yeah.
And she now has a compulsory order on her house. I mean, buildings are growing up around her like weeds. And I mean, she's getting intimidating knocks on her door from people from the council coming around saying, your roof is unsafe, your building is unsafe, and giving her all these reasons why you're going to have to take the offer we've given you for your house, because you can't actually live there anyway. Your building is deemed as unsafe, and there's a residence behind you, and if your roof fell down, and, you know, all this stuff. And, like, these people think that they're like in the 80s, they're going to pull the wool over our eyes. If these developers and the people in the council that are putting pressure on people, if these people don't think that we're sitting at home doing research, getting solicitors, being ready for all this, they have something coming. Because I'm telling you now, I will be caught on the news with a ball and chain to my house before anybody comes and tries to knock it down. Because we did not live through the heroin epidemic, live through the injustice, live through the poverty, the overcrowding and the pure neglect for 30 years, 40 years to then keep it warm for developers that want to come in and say, all right, go on, out you go. We're ready. Like, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of listeners, and I'm sure you've seen this mad swimming pool in London, the glass swimming pool that was put between two buildings. The developer who did that swimming pool is the one that has he's an Irish developer, Ballymore is the name of the company, and that's the exact same developer that has the one ready for Cherry Street, you know? And most of the residents in those apartments can't even access that pool. I mean, what does that say?
Yeah. If people are listening and you want them to take away one thing from our conversation, what's that thing?
I think that I think most people aren't aware, right? So I posted on my Instagram and on my Twitter the kind of history and the pattern of what happened in the development of the IFSC in the 80s. We had politicians and stuff on camera, you know, on the news even saying, no, there's going to be social housing. We want museums. We want galleries. We don't plan any office or anything like that. And then right next to it, it was in a documentary, right next to it on the other side of the screen is actually what was built there. Yeah. And it was just all apartments. So I actually think that, you know, like I said earlier, there's probably people sitting listening going, here we go, another one harping on about the housing crisis and, you know, another working class person just thinking that they deserve everything. And I'm sure there are people listening. And if you're one of those people, I want to say that I don't think you're, I'm not blaming you, but I'm not blaming you because the media would have you think that that's the case. What I want you to do is I want you to sit and think about or look into a quick Google. There's a documentary called Made Ground. If you Google that, you will find all the information on this. What was done in the 80s was a complete pulling the wool over the most vulnerable people in society's eyes, promising them community housing, stuff that they've been asking. Now, and I'm not just talking about housing, I'm talking about facilities. I'm talking about, you know, when you're left for neglect with the housing crisis or with the heroin epidemic. And all these promises, these empty promises that were made and what was actually given, it was a complete, I mean, some of the most disgusting stuff that was done there. I even as a person that's from there, I know I'm going to be biased, but I know if it was in any other area, I would feel exactly the same. I think that those people who might have that frame of mind are not aware of what actually went down. Yeah. And I want those people to know that, like, we're not looking for free housing. We're not even looking for resources or facilities or anything at this stage, because we know that we don't get that. We're asking to be left alone after all the years of trauma and prejudice and, like, you know, having to fight that bit harder. Just leave us alone, you know, and at least stop making empty promises. You know, this new development is 5,000 jobs. Yeah, for 5 years. And then what? You know, our community is going to be left in the shadows. Also the metaphorical shadows, like we always are, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to get a better understanding, want other people who are outside our community to get a better understanding of what's going on. This is much bigger than people looking for free housing. That's not what this is about at all. This is looking at the degradation of our community over the last 20, 30 years. And like I say, Sheriff Street and the North Inner City has produced so many legends. Luke Kelly, Jim Sheridan, Barry Keoghan. I mean, I've mentioned them all. What are we going to have left? What are we going to have left when all we have is built to rent apartments that cost $1,700 a month for a one bed, hotels? You know, we see this all over the city. We are going to have nothing left. And, you know, Ireland and Dublin in particular is known for its sense of community and its closeness. And I just don't want us to look back one day and go, oh God, we should have held on to that.
Gemma Dunleavy, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
Louise McSherry on 2FM.